Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Guys, we're back. It's Knife Talk. This is a podcast for knife makers, knife enthusiasts, DIYers, anybody got any interest in knife making, knife production, fooling around, whatever you want. I'm Jeff Fader, freshly back from the Blade Show. I'm here with Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives. Unfortunately, Mareko is in the air. He's in the air, he's on the ground, and he's in Europe. Couldn't make it, but we're going to hold it down. Craig, how the hell are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, I had a text this morning that woke me up, and it was Mareko saying, I'm flying over Cardiff as we speak. I was like, oh, wow, okay, cool. So, yeah, I think he got to Paris. I think he's got an overnight in Paris. Then he's flying off to Italy, I believe. He's going to Italy.
I thought he's going to see Fingal.
Fingal first, was it? Okay,
I have no idea.
But anyway, he was in Paris anyway today. So, yeah, he's getting around. Really is.
It's great. Let me just, before I say anything, I want to know how you were doing, but just let you know, your name was said a lot at Blade Show.
Really?
Oh, people right, want okay. you over there next year, and there's a lot of people trying to figure out how the hell are we going to get Craig Lockwood at Blade Show next year. and you know what I did? I put my fingers together, my thumb and my fingers together, and I rubbed them around, which is the international sound of money. So
quite
that's
true.
How you do it. That's how you do it. You'll fucking pay. You're
quite
fucking
true.
Pay.
Yes. How was it anyway, Blade? I saw lots and lots of pictures.
It was amazing. But before we get into it, I want to know how you're doing. How are you handling? Are you getting this heat? Is everything okay in your hometown? How
heat.
Are you?
We wish. It's starting to be a bit summery now, but it's not our usual summer weather yet still. We've got no issues with the heat here. It's all good. All good. I flew back in. What day is it today?
It's Thursday.
Thursday. I flew back in on Monday, and I fly back out tomorrow morning, back to the UK tomorrow morning for 10 days. So, yeah, it's just been nonstop back and forth at the moment, but it's all good. I can't complain.
Do you do like a credit card with like miles and stuff like that?
No, because we got a very small airport here, so it's like a really budget airline. That's the only one that flies from it, so they don't do anything like that, unfortunately.
Right.
But I've got a great weekend coming up. So I fly back Friday. On Saturday, I drive to Manchester to watch the Foo Fighters.
Oh, man.
On Sunday, I stay in Manchester to watch Liam Gallagher, where we've got sort of backstage sort of tickets.
Oh, my God.
Not even tickets, just sort of we're sort of backstage for that. And then Monday morning, we then go into a studio for a week with a band that I loved back in the 90s, which I'm getting my first sort of production credit on as well. So that's pretty cool. So I'm sort of assistant producer for their new album. So it's a crazy, crazy 10 days for me coming up.
So, I give you so much goddamn credit. You really have kind of like manifested this dream.
It does feel like that a bit at the moment. I'm sort of now working in the music industry, you know, and I'm working with, just you know, getting to go backstage at Liam Gallagher and meeting him and all the band. It's going to be pretty cool. But then it's going straight to the studio to work with like a 90s band, like I said, which I loved. So,
are you finding yourself having to change your like appearance and attitude and saying man more? You have to like say man more. I would think you have to kind of cool it up.
Yeah. I know on Saturday night when we go to see Liam that I'm going to be trying to play it cool, you know? It's the only way to do it, really, isn't it? You know, you can't go in.
Right.
Oh, can I have pictures? Can I do all the rest of it? You know, because I'm going as a guest, is sort of invited, so I need to play it cool. Regards to sort of changing appearance and stuff, yeah, and I think that's due to the band.
Yeah.
You know, being like nearly 50 up on stage, you want to look cool. You don't look like this old fat dude with grey hair, which is what I am. So you've got to put up this whole illusion on, you know? But yeah, no, it's all good fun.
I can see in the next 5 years you're going to say, I'm vegan, man.
I don't think that's happening.
Oh, okay. No. All right, well, that's that.
But last weekend, my wife flew over and she came to the first gig of ours, that she's seen, rather.
Right.
It wasn't the best of gigs either, to be honest.
Why?
I did. We were a bit rusty. We live in three different countries, the band, you know? So we don't get to rehearse that much. Generally, when we've got a show on, we'll get back to Wales for the whole weekend. We'll rehearse, you know, way plenty of times before the show. But this time we didn't have a chance to do that, so we went straight in. We hadn't played together in 6 weeks. And it wasn't the best. I'm sure the audience didn't probably notice, but, you know, we notice. You know, we know how things are meant to be, so... So that was that. But it was good fun. I can't complain.
At the end of the show, you guys get back. You're all sweaty. You're wiping your heads off and stuff like that. And then you just turn to them all and you kind of like, all right, guys, we got to really pick it up the next time. This is some bullshit. We got to figure this out.
Pretty much. Tear down later. We all agreed it was the worst we've ever played together. You know, we all agreed. So the next show is actually for a couple of weeks. It's in 3 weeks. But that's a big, big festival. That's like 12,000 people at our stage. So,
Jesus Christ.
So we've got a full day beforehand rehearsing because we're having a brass band join us as well. So they're coming to rehearse. There's a couple of songs where there's horn section and stuff. So they're joining us on the stage for a few songs. So we've got a full day rehearsals with them before the big show. So that'll be cool.
So everybody asking, how are we going to get Craig over to the Blade show next year? You've just kind of heard, you know, you kind of see where the entrance point is. I mean, it's like big time money. You got to get this guy over there. It's a big time money.
I wouldn't say big time. I'd say if my flights and my accommodation's covered, I'm over. Because I'd love just to meet everybody. It'd be so cool.
And Ben Snurer were the two names I heard. I wish they came.
Really? Oh, Ben didn't go either.
I'm working on Ben for next year. I wasn't going to go just because for me, it's like, getting away is hard, you know, getting out of the shop, getting out from home. My kid now is up at 4 o'clock in the morning for the bakery and we get the goddamn dogs and one of them's becoming a old pain in the ass. And then, you know, I found out my mother just had a fall and she's not doing well. So it's like, it's hard for me to like leave for a weekend. So I said that on this podcast, you know, I didn't think the last time I went was 2019 and I had a great time. You go for one night, you go for 2 days. In my opinion, you don't need 2 days. 2 days, 3 days is like mental patient time. Mm. And 2 days is like, I'm not a big drinker anymore. So it's like, I don't want to be hungover.
Get out.
I got a message from Lawrence Lake, Maritime Knife Supply. He says, if I took care of you, because he's one of our sponsors.
Yeah,
for the full blast too. He said, if you take care of the plane tickets, you come down. And he said, nice. I got miles. And I said, yeah, absolutely. So I figured I got a plane flight to left New York 6 o'clock in the morning, which meant that I had to leave the house at 2 o'clock in the morning. Mm. And then the flight leaving Atlanta left at 10 o'clock at night, getting me back at home. So I got home. I left at 2 o'clock in the morning and I got home the next day at 2 o'clock in the morning. So I needed to be back in the house. It was all squared away. I tell you, I had the best time. But you know what? Here's why Lawrence Lake is so good. He's so goddamn smart. He surprised me by upgrading me to first class.
Oh, wow.
Which was like monster. That was like the slickest move of all time. And frankly, he fucking ruined me for flying any other way.
Flying the other way.
And it was amazing. But the funny part about, do you fly first class?
No. I said we can't here. I mean, if we were in Paris, we could. But we're... It's just one little tiny budget airline we can use.
In my opinion, it's like if you're flying somewhere, I don't need to spend a lot of money for luxury for a plane flight. Like it seems it seems extraneous, but like he's got all these miles and he was able to bump me up and Jesus Christ, now I know why these motherfuckers go to first class. It is, I mean, it's number one, all of a sudden you're one of the assholes people look at because you get on first. So you got to look down at the ground while everyone's boarding with their kids.
How long is the flight?
It was only 2.5 hours.
Oh, fuck's sake.
But it was great. It was so comfortable. But the funny thing is the people in first class, they don't know how to act. Like every time I got on the first class, I thought these are, you know, I wanted to make sure I had extra deodorant with me. I didn't want to smell. I didn't want to look disgusting. I wanted to comport myself to be a first class guy.
Yeah.
And the fucking woman next to me, 6 o'clock in the morning, the stewardess comes over and she says, "Oh, do you have any champagne?" I'm like, "What the fuck you want champagne for at 6 o'clock in the morning?" And then on the way back is the same thing. Guy immediately like, "Do you have any champagne?" These motherfuckers don't have champagne. This is Delta. This is a small flight to Atlanta. They're not gonna bust out the Moët for you. It's like you don't know how to act. But we got down there. I met so many of our listeners who are amazing, and we got so much. It was such a good vibe. You'd nice. Fucking love it, and I'm telling you why. We number one, I saw the guys from Even Heat. They send their regards. I saw the guy. Nice. I spent most of the afternoon with Lawrence, who was fantastic. We had a great time. I saw the Damascene people. Carly's outstanding. We can talk about that. I saw Evan from Texas Ferry Supply. I saw the only people I didn't get to see was Combat weren't there and Dasa weren't there, but everybody else, you know, I hung out with. It was great.
Nice.
And
nice.
It was really cool. And we saw all these people. I did have a couple of unfortunate mishaps, a couple of
really
incidents.
With who? Can you tell me who?
Well, number one, I got flagged down by Mike Quisenberry, who I was walking down the aisles and I saw some friends of ours, and then all of a sudden I hear, "Hey, Jeff!" It's Mike Quisenberry and his wife Antoinette, who are fantastic, master bladesmith. He's one of the best. And then I'm talking to him, and I look down a couple down from him, and I see there's Will Stelter, and he's on the phone. And in my mind, I'm like, "How do you yell over to Will Stelter?" I just turned over and yelled, and I said, "Hey, Stelter, nobody's on the phone for you. Get off that phone. Nobody's on the phone." Well, it turns out he didn't, you know, as, I don't know, this isn't a secret, but most of the guys who applied for the Master Bladesmith didn't pass. And he was one of the people who didn't pass. He was unbelievable. He was obviously depressed, but at the same time, he was, you know what, this is going to be the best thing for him. This isn't one of those learning experiences. I ended up talking to Will for quite a long time. And he's such a good kid, man. He's such a good kid. And he was great. And he was bummed out. Obviously, he spent a lot of time. His work is unbelievable. And he was just such a nice guy. So we're talking, and I'm just like saying, and I'm saying to myself, you know what? I said to him, I'm like, "Don't fucking worry about the goddamn ABS. Fuck the ABS. Fuck them. Fuck the ABS. You're a master bladesmith."
Who was standing next to you at the time?
So
I'm guessing.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead and guess.
I don't know. I wouldn't
His
know.
His mother. And all of a sudden I hear, "I knew I heard that voice and that language, and I knew." And I'm like, "Oh, for fuck." I'm trying to, and then all of a sudden there she is, Mrs. Stelter, who for years.
Mrs. Stelter.
Mrs. Stelter, all of a sudden it's like, "I knew I recognized that foul mouth." And I'm just like, "I'm trying to console your fucking son here." And next thing you know, she's screaming and hollering at me. And I just realize, I'm like, "Oh my God, this is hilarious." Because for Knife Talk, for years we would say, "I'm sorry," because Mrs. Stelter used to listen. Yeah, "I'm sorry for Mrs. Stelter. I'm sorry, Mr." So then I just turned to her. I'm like, "You know, I'm 50 years old. I don't fucking scold me." And I turned to Stelter. I said, "Get a hold of your mom. She can't be yelling at me in the middle of the street like this. Are we crazy?" So it was very fun. That was fun. And we had a lot of laughs. And then awesome time with Damascene. Carly's fantastic. And the whole crew was there. And they were having
Pear
a good...
That was Pear there, too.
Pear was not... I had a very funny story with Carly. I said to Carly, "Level with me. Pear doesn't like me, right?" I said, "Let's face it. He gets mad when he has to cut them checks to me. Don't tell the truth. Tell the fucking truth." And she goes, "Well, it's not quite like that," or something like that. So she didn't immediately say no, but I was, you know, he's a strange, you know, he's a, you know, he's got a different way about it. So no, he loves you guys. I'm just
the
like
silence said.
That was too long of a wait. It's all good. I said, "You know what? I know that it's." Pear's great, and he's such a good sense of humor, but I was very funny because she was just like, there was enough pause to be like, "Okay, I guess I was right." So, but they were awesome. They had a great time. We spent some time with them, and we were hanging out, and Mareko was there. Mareko looked great, and it was always good to see him, and we were taking pictures with Justin Stinson and Labrador Forge and Labrado Forge and Justin Blauart was there, and Brigham Kindell was there. Bingo was there. He was so cool. And Brian House came by, and B. Cone Knives, and, you know, it was just, it is an awesome vibe. And
it's a good bunch of people.
Oh,
nice.
Outstanding. And then I loaded my bag. I spent $1,000 so fast, it'll make your head spin. I went over.
What did you buy?
Here's the thing, and this is something that I've been saying forever, is it's so hard to buy handle material online because you can't look at it. You know what I mean? Like, the blocks just, you won't notice that there's like a weird bark, you know, piece of bark in a place that you know that you can't like go around. You know what I mean? There'll be some figure in there that's going to fuck you up, and you kind of know it if you saw it in your hand, you know? So I my whole thing is when I go down there, there's like maybe seven guys who are selling wood, and one of them is the best, Rob's Wildwood. I've talked about him before here. He is the only one worth a damn. If you ain't following Rob's Wildwood on Instagram, you're making a huge mistake. His scales are kick-ass. His blocks are kick-ass all the time, every time. And I'm going to do a deal with him pretty soon because it was just good to see him and his son. And it was really cool. I hadn't been there in 5 years. And it was great. And it was seeing all these people. And it was just like, it was a lot of fun. And then I had one more incident. Before I was leaving, I was like, well, who should I couldn't see everybody. You know, I was there for the whole day, but at the same time, I was like, I couldn't see everybody. We saw Charlie Lionheart. And we saw, you know, Knives by Nuge was there. He sends his regards. You know, guys who listen to the show, was really cool, you know? So I'm thinking to myself, like, you know what? I always see Kyle Daly when I come to when I come to the show. I can't leave without saying goodbye to Kyle. So I walk over to Kyle Daly, and every time I see Kyle, he's always trying to sell me something. I just want to say hello. I don't want to fucking buy anything. He made me buy a sheath from him last time. He's hawking me in China every time I see him. I'm thinking, I can't leave and not say hi to Kyle. So we walk over to Kyle. First thing. This motherfucker is like one of them Turkish rug salesmen. I mean, he's like, my friend,
let me show you. Come inside.
I'm telling you, every fucking time, it's or like you go to the Caribbean and like, jet ski, snorkel, you come with me. My friend, I have something for you.
Some special deal.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, all of a sudden he goes, oh, I have something for you. And he pulls out this reciprocating, like a tiger saw. You know what I'm talking about? Those reciprocating saws?
Yeah.
The battery-powered reciprocating saw with some doohickey he made on the end from his 3D printer that holds like a mold polishing stone.
Well,
and he starts pulling the trigger. He says, you need, oh, my friend, you need this. You need it, my friend. This is good for you. It's perfect for you. And like, Kyle, what are you doing?
3D printed a dildo on the top.
So I said to him, I don't want it. He's like, oh, it's going to make your hand sanding so much faster. I'm like, don't worry about that. And he goes, no. And he goes, every 5 minutes I'm talking, he goes, brr, brr, brr. And I'm like, Kyle, get you and your fucking fuck toy away from me. I can't handle it right now. Then his father's there. And I think to myself, he's trying to hawk me in China, like a Turkish rug salesman. He's trying to sell me everything. Like, Kyle, stop trying to sell me shit. I just wanted to come say hello. So his dad's there. And I said, are you Mr. Daly? And he goes, oh, what did I do? And I said, I was thinking to myself, you got to stop your son from trying to sell me everything all the time. And I was actually very nice. I said, your son's very talented, and I've known him for a long time. He's great and stuff like that. So he's trying to hawk me in China. He's trying to like Turkish rug salesman. He's trying to get me into everything.
Brilliant.
And then Brian House is over there, and I start yelling at Brian House. I said, this is all your fault. You're turning these motherfuckers all into used car salesmen. This is all your fault. All your inspirational quotes. You're trying to make these turning guys into a flood of Turkish rug salesmen. So it was fun. I had two crazy Uber drivers. Like, I never want to hear another thing about how scary it is in New York. One Uber driver was telling me how dangerous it is in Atlanta, and he was trying to scare the shit out of me. The other one was a knife maker who said to me, this is perfect. No, it wasn't a knife maker, it was a machinist. He's asking me all these questions, and you don't want to be a jerk because you don't want to, you know, you want to talk to him on the way to the airport. He's asking about steel, he's asking about this, and then he follows all these YouTube guys. So he's asking me about heat treating and stuff like that. And I said, well, you know, he said, I got a question about heat treating. So it's non-magnetic, right? Non-magnetic means that it's the critical temperature. I'm like, well, yeah. Kind of not really. He's like, so let me ask you this question. I've been pondering. The Earth's core is like molten, and it's kind of non-magnetic. So where are these magnetic fields coming from? And then I think to myself, oh my God, I'm on a Uber with a flat earther.
Yeah.
And he's just like, it's just like something that always pondered to me. I was always, you know, I was wondering, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, oh God, I said, I don't know anything about it. And he's just kind of starting to talk about flat earth. And I'm just like, oh my God. And all I could think of is the only thing that's going to be good is I could tell Craig this. I could tell Craig about this maniac Uber driver. And I'm just like, oh Jesus Christ, get me off this flat earth.
Do you realize he spent all week saying to people, you'll never guess who I had in my cab this week. You'll never guess who I had in my cab.
Oh, he'll probably tell the next time. You know, I was with a knife maker and he was telling me, I'm absolutely right about the magnetic fields. I was like, oh Jesus Christ. But it was awesome. You'd love it. You would love it. And people would treat you like a fucking rock star. The real, I mean, like, you treat you like
about,
a rock star.
About fucking time, too.
You'd be like, you show up. I'm telling you what. You wouldn't have to. You'd never buy a drink. You wouldn't. I mean, people would lose their fucking minds.
We need to do a show there, one. We've said it for years, actually. If the three of us could get there, if we could do a show from there.
I mean,
there,
you know,
cool.
Lawrence has even mentioned, he's like, how are you going to do this? I'm like, you're the... Listen, there is no better facilitator in the knife-making world than Lawrence Lake. He's been so helpful to so many people. Like, just even businesses trying to figure out how to figure things out. And man, I had a really great time spending time with him. And I'm trying to think about what else. You know what? The only thing that was like weird, but at the same time familiar, was like you'd walk down like this hallway, and then you'd hear like what sounded like crickets or cicadas, and it was these kids with their fucking bally song,
oh, right.
Butterfly,
yeah.
Flippity flip. And the best part was every so often you'd see a group of them, and they're flipping with their hairs and their eyes, and they're got the emo look, and you'd see this one lone dad with his hand in his head. You know, it's like how long do I have to fucking be here with this fucking flipping child of mine? So, but that's it, man.
Brilliant.
Fucking Blade Show is awesome. And I cannot thank enough everybody who was so super psyched to see us and supportive. And yeah, awesome. So many people were coming up to me saying how much Knife Talk means to them. And
brilliant.
I had to tell you everything. And all the people who send our regards really were like, a lot of people were missing you. So...
Amazing.
If that makes you
amazing.
Feel even.
How's Mareko?
He's great. He looks great. He
good
brought
stuff.
A knife. He was showing it to Mike Quisenberry, and he was great taking pictures, and he was giving out. He had the calendars, and he was just great. It was great to see him. He was really in his element, and everyone was super happy to see him, and he was really cool. And
driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It was just, I have nothing bad to say. I mean, you know, I don't have a thing about bad. Even I was having a good time. I mean, I make jokes about Kyle and then Mrs. Stelter, but it's all fun. It was all fun and it was funny. And, you know, it was fun. It was funny getting yelled at by Mrs. Stelter. That was, I will say that was pretty funny. So
amazing.
There you go.
Amazing. So the people who weren't there, we had Combat Abrasives weren't there.
I didn't see them.
So
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now.
15% off. Go and do it. So, okay, what we can do? We're going to do
We got questions. We have questions. We have listener feedback. We also have a lot more would you rather. And we're starting to get the tool regrets in. I want to wait a couple more weeks to get a little bit, a few more tool regrets. But other than that, it's whatever you want. Okay. And when we get to the different sponsors, there's Broadbeck has a special announcement to make. So I'll make that.
Cool. Okay. Well, should we start with some feedback maybe?
That sounds great. So guys, if you want to send us your feedback, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and then you can DM us your questions, your feedback, your would you rather or your tour regrets or whatever. This one comes from Harry Gray. Hey, Knife Talk. Excellent episode as usual. The question about 7 days of 1 hour knife making versus seven hours in one day, and your subsequent discussion was on point. So a couple episodes ago, somebody posed the question, would you rather work 7 hours for one day a week, 7 hours, or 7 1-hour segments? We talked about that for a while. Yeah. He said, Craig had some good points, but I'm with Jeff. You have to make the most of what you got, and if I didn't get up at 5 a.m. each day for an hour in the workshop, I wouldn't be able to make knives at all. With a full-time job, 3 kids at primary school, and play weekend sports and often other hobbies too, a 7-hour stretch in the workshop is a distant fantasy for me, as it would be for many. You may break up your rhythm, but if you leave everything laid out and picked up next time, then muscle memory will take over if you have any continued grinding. I want to say, if you want something bad enough, you'll make it work. All the best, Harry. So, yeah, the messages we've been getting from all the... this is a good, nice one. This is one from Jesse Lang. A number of episodes ago, we had a guy who was anonymous who was talking about just being divorced and stuff like that. Remember that?
Yeah.
He was trying to get his life together. Jesse Lang says, I really appreciate all you guys do, especially the Real Talk episodes. There was an anonymous guy who wrote in about getting divorced, and I went through that whole process about a year and a half ago. Knife Talk was a comfort to me, too, at that time. One of the positive takeaways from what the situation was awareness of how important it is to check in with friends and make sure they're doing okay. Know that they can talk about shit. Feel free to give my name/Instagram to the anonymous person who wrote in, just in case he wants to talk to someone who likes making knives and has been there with the divorce thing. And come out better for it. So that's at Jesse Lang. So Jesse's a good dude. See, that was the cool thing was about a Blade show was there were so many people. I saw Josh Scott. It was great seeing Josh Scott. He had a very funny story. I don't know if I told you. Yeah, we talked about the snake that was in my shop.
Yes. Yeah, we talked on the show.
So
he
sent me a message. He said, you're not going to believe this. There's a snake in my shop too. He lived in California. And there's a big ass snake, and he just didn't know what to do. If I was near the California desert, and I wouldn't know either. I wouldn't know what kind of snake it was. So he had to call the fire department.
Jeez.
The fire department showed up. This fucking big fat firefighter was in gloves. He was couldn't be happier. Grabbed it. He's like, oh yeah, this is just like a garter snake. You're fine. So Josh's like, all right, well good. Get the fuck out of here. Take it with you.
But funnily enough, I've seen 2 snakes today here. One was run over on the road, just squashed everywhere, and I took Buddy, the young one, to the beach this morning, and as we were driving, I saw a guy on the side of the road with a shovel, and he's just battering fuck up the floor.
Oh my god!
So, what's going on here?
So I pulled up
just so I could see what was happening, and it was a big snake that he was battering. I think it's that time of the year; they're all coming out now, you know.
The French don't like snakes, do they?
Really don't like snakes. Yeah. No.
They don't fucking do it. They fucking. I had half the people who, when I said I had a snake, they said you should fucking hit it with a shovel. I'm like, I'm not doing that. What? And why? I'm not gonna. I'll just get rid of it. But yeah, it was good to see him too. Speedster Stove. That's all right. Speedster Stove says not cool to hear about some bell end has been giving Jeff grief via DM. Jeff, I'm with you. That's Gary. Good old Gary.
Bell end.
Bill McKenney says, man, this is terrible in a funny way. I'll have you know that after the, quote, vibes are immaculate episode ended, I had to listen to a commercial. Oh, we were talking about how the commercials. Oh, and I got to talk to you about the commercials. There was about the Tasteless commercials. After the episode ended, there was a commercial for Breast Science. I'll never be the same again. And as always, thanks for the laughs and so much more of the knowledge drops.
breast science.
Yeah. We're getting weird. Wow. We're still getting these. I'm still getting messages about people saying that like the levels of the audio are like wacko. And not to mention, I guess in that last episode, Mareko fucking yelled into the microphone and laughed or something crazy, and everyone, I got some fucking heat from that too. So
really,
okay. Yeah. But okay. I don't give a shit about.
Yeah.
And then EDC Gearhouse Ben says, feedback or just a quick thing, just learned that you can fast forward on the ads while listening to your podcast on Spotify, so that's cool. Jeff, April Fool's joke was great. Mareko, you have an Mareko has an IMDb page, and the internet has called you a quote internet personality. Thought that was
really
wild. Keep up the excellent work, gents. Love from Northern Michigan.
An IMDb page for Mareko. Wow.
Well, look, he's been on Forge and Fire. He's been on some things.
Yeah.
So
He's seen some things.
Regarding getting rid of the ads and skipping through them.
Yeah.
I use an app called Overcast for. I listen to tons of podcasts, so I use Overcast, which is a podcasting app, and it's brilliant. And there's like a 30-second jump feature in that, so as soon as an ad starts, you can hit 30 seconds. And generally, most ads are 30 seconds. Yeah. But yeah, Overcast is really good.
I only get bummed out when the commercials step on my jokes. Everything else, they step on my jokes. I'm just like, oh, that was a good one. That was a good. Could have been a good one. Could have been better.
Keeps people hanging. That's what it does.
Sure does. Yeah. So we can do whatever you want. I mean, that was pretty good feedback. We also have good questions that you and I can answer. Not too many.
Let's do some questions then. What's the first one? Ben Halbauer. And he's asked us a question on Instagram. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. DM us those questions. We'll add them to the list. But I'm going to keep you hanging just before we do.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Even Heat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
And just to let you know, those Quinn and Spence are the best at Even Heat. They were saying, wishing you well, and they were telling you how much the podcast means to them. That was awesome. One thing that the sponsors were all saying to me when I would talk to them, how much they value what we do and also how supportive our listeners are. So I want to give a round of applause and a round of applause to the listeners, because these motherfuckers keep playing. They keep paying.
Yeah, that's really good to hear.
I don't know how much Pear will. Pear don't like it, but he will keep paying.
He doesn't have to like you, Jeff.
I don't know, man. Last time we were at the Damn Steel Invitational, you had a picture of him. You had him superimposed on top of
Britney Spears.
Yeah, on top of Britney Spears. You didn't know what the hell is going on.
That's
getting
become
tore
a
up.
Sort of an annual thing now, making him feel awkward. But
dude, you're the best. I swear to God, you literally are the best. Part of me thinks there's the reason why Craig Lockwood is the best. He will definitely go to the point where, let's see if this gets us fired. And I'm for it. I'm all for it. Like, I'm old school radio, or just like, let's push it as far as we can and see how far we can go. So I'm all in. But I'm like, oh, there he is. He superimposed the boss on Britney Spears dancing with knives. I'm like, we'll see how this lasts. Keep inviting us back.
It's all good. It's all good fun. Anyway, Ben Halbauer. Yes, he's DM'd us on Instagram. He says, cheers, guys. Jeff, how do you grind your friction folder blades? I recently made one by myself and found out there's not much to hold on to. Thanks for all the great hours of content, and stay sharp.
This is all a freehanding issue with all knives. And I don't know how. Do you freehand at all? Freehand knives at all? Grind?
No, nothing is freehand with me. I've built jigs for everything that I do. And when I was doing those little folding blades, I know what he means, because you've got this tiny little nubbin, really, haven't you, to hold on to. So I made this little jig with a pin in it. So the pin goes through the hole. And as long as it's not thicker than the spine. And again, it was a purposeful design. So when I designed the blade, it doesn't go, the grind doesn't go all the way to the spine. It's sort of a partial. So then you know that as long as whatever you're holding the blade in, and it's got this pin that goes through the hole, and then the spine sits against this thing, as long as you know you're not grinding all the way down there, you know you're going to be fine. And as long as it's not thicker than the spine as well, this little jig that I've made. So that basically gives me a fake handle, as if I'm just grinding something bigger. And I always grind with the spine down on some sort of tool rest anyway. So yeah, that's the way I did it. But when you do yours, do you put it in any sort of jig or any sort of fake handle to make it bigger?
I make fake handles for all the knives because, like, even if you're holding the blade where the blade is up, I have especially if you have a file guide on it, the kind of like the end, the bottom is sharp and it hurts your hand. So I make a fake handle for all of them. Yeah. But when I do the friction folders, I will, before I rivet it all together, I'll put it in the handle and then I'll use a screw and a bolt, a washer, a screw and like a wing nut. And then I'll grind it in the thing, but it's not fully in there. So it's like it's just basically screwed on to the handle that I would use.
Yeah.
So yeah that whole, the most important thing I learned from welding is welding isn't even just about welding. It's just about being comfortable. So everything is like set up and being as comfortable as possible. So when you're moving in the most fluid and economic way possible and efficient way. So I have like fake handles for almost everything. And it makes it so much more comfortable because if you're holding like a 3/32 or a thin knife, it's just brutal. Even when we go to, I'm going to Florentine in a couple weeks, I made fake handles for when we help grind the knives over at his place, because they're especially with the hidden tang, I mean, there's nothing to hold on to.
Yeah.
And you can't, and if you're uncomfortable, it sucks. So do it a fake handle. But for me, for the friction folders, I'll make the blade, then I'll make the handle, and then I'll kind of get it all squared away. And then I'll put in a screw and a wing nut. It'll be in the open position. And then sometimes I'll tape it open to make sure it doesn't kind of like flop closed while I'm grinding or wiggle around. That's a good ass question. He's a good dude. Ben came to Barcelona last time.
Oh, cool.
Oh, speaking of Barcelona, so I chat with Tomer all the time. Tomer's, fucking guy's like, he's like turning into like a brother to me. And I'm telling him, I'm like, he's like, how's Blade Show? I'm like, oh, it's unbelievable. Lawrence Lake upgraded me to first class tickets, and all of a sudden there's a silence on the typing. He goes, "Well, don't get any ideas. You're not getting upgraded. I'm not upgrading you to first class." I was like, "You're my fucking guy." I said, "You're my guy. Don't get any ideas. I'm not upgrading you to first class."
Has Toma opened up another shop, a sharpening shop or something?
Well, so last time I was there, he said that he was telling me about it early on, and he said that he was going to have sharpening services available because, I mean, you know, look, times are tough. I'm not saying times are tough for him, but I mean, in order to kind of go forward, it would be good to have other opportunities. So he has this guy who is an unbelievably great, I'm a Japanese knife sharpener, and he's got part of the shop is this knife sharpening system, and they do classes, and then the end of our class, he's going to do this knife sharpening class. So he's got a service with a real serious, like a real serious Japanese knife sharpening guy, and he's got tons of room in that space, and it's beautiful. And I'm looking forward to meeting this guy. I don't remember his name, but just Tomer's smart man.
He's on it, isn't he?
The
yeah.
hardest part about this whole business, and actually we could talk about this. Actually, very interesting is I talked to New Jersey Steel Baron a lot. I know those guys, and they were saying how not disappointed, but how better they did at Blade Show than they did this year by a lot. Mm-hmm. And I talked to a lot of knife makers who are high-end knife makers and, you know, different, you know, small, lower price knives. The high-end guys did not do great as a whole, this Blade Show. And usually by Saturday, you can kind of tell. And I definitely talked to a lot of guys who were, I wouldn't say disappointed, but not thrilled. You know, usually, you know, you want to sell everything out. But there was a lot, they were saying there was a lot less traffic for the higher end stuff. And then guys who were doing, you know, who kicked ass, you know who Bald Man Knife and Tool is?
Yes, yeah, he works with... with
Brian.
Ryan, yes, yeah.
That dude was on Seventh. He was in Seventh Heaven. He had a booth. He had dudes. He was selling stuff. He turns to me and he puts his arm around me. He goes, "Jeff, I want to tell you something. I made Blade Show my bitch." I was like, "All right, man. Like, you go, Bald Man. You fucking made your bitch. You made him his bitch. Made Blade Show my bitch." So yeah, nice. So you know, I think that there was. We saw Jordan Danz. That's JD Custom Knives. He listens every week. He's awesome. There was, I said, Knives by Nuge. All these guys were like real, you know, they were hauling ass. These guys who had never made knives before, they listened to the podcast. Then they all had beautiful booths with the flags and the tablecloths, and they had beautiful stuff and everything like that. And it was cool seeing guys who started out listening to us, and now they're like pros. Amazing. And some guys were killing it. Some guys were like Knives by Nuge. He's another one of our guys who's started out making it in his backyard listening to us. And now he had a beautiful table and he had packaging and beautiful knives. He had the whole salesmanship thing going on. It was awesome.
Amazing. Amazing. Did you see anything there that you were really tempted to buy yourself knife-wise?
Well, see, the thing is I'm not carrying anything on the plane.
I know you didn't go there looking, but was there anything that
there
you
was
did
a
see
lot there? Of there was, you know what, I had a lot of guys who wanted me to bring back shit for them. I'm like, I'm not checking bags. You can forget. Oh, yeah. And I had a fucking thing with the TSA, by the way. So I made sure that nobody, like Kyle wanted to give me this beautiful bottle opener, and I turned it down just because I just didn't want to take it on the plane. And it looked like it was enough that I was going to have a problem. And Nordic Edge gave me a file guide, and I was just like, I hope this isn't a problem. So I go through TSA, and I'm thinking, I just have a shit ton of blocks in my bag, right? And I'm thinking, there's nothing in there that should be a problem. Maybe, I don't know if they think that... You know, I didn't bring steel back with me. The Baker Forge guys were there, and I didn't bring steel back with me. I brought anything that could possibly be thought of as something to be taken away. I didn't get it. Go through TSA, go through the bags. The bag goes through, and then it gets shuffled off into the inspection department. Yeah, so I'm thinking to myself, okay, I got nothing in there I'm worried about, but they're going to ask questions. So this dude is like opening up my bag, and he's pulling block after block. I got 20 fucking blocks and sets of scales in my bag. And he's looking at me, and I'm trying to think to myself, just don't say certain words. You know, I don't know. You know, when I was a kid, my dad said, whatever you do, don't
say. It's not as if I'm a terrorist.
Yeah, well, when I was a kid, my dad told me, when you go to the airport, never say the word bomb. Just don't say it. You know, this is like, don't even make a joke. Don't even say, never. So I'm thinking to myself, all right, let's just not say the word knife in the airport, just because, I mean, let's not tempt fate.
Yeah.
This guy's going through my bag, he's pulling one thing out. And I said, what are these? Are these samples? And I said, oh, I'm a craftsman. And I said, oh, she says, so what are these for? He said, are these samples? And I'm like, no, they're handles. And he goes, handles for what? Drawer pulls? And I'm like, well, no, they're, and he's asking me these questions. He's pulling things out. He's like, oh, this is really cool. And he goes, and I'm like, all right, well, I'm a knife maker. He's, oh man, that's awesome. And he keeps pulling stuff out of my bag, That's awesome. Where, how can I find you? You have a business card? He's pulling stuff, more stuff out of my bag, And I'm like, I don't have a business card, but here's a sticker. You can look it up on Instagram. He's like, oh, that's awesome. He took everything out of the bag and then hands it all to me. He's like, oh man, you're super cool, man. I'm really cool to meet you. I had to repack my whole fucking bag. This guy had no sense of I'm really being an impediment to this guy's life. I took everything out. I had to repack absolutely everything. And it was like, I should be happy. So the answer is, what would I have brought back? I mean, I could have bought more scales from Rob's Wildwood. I could have definitely got more scales from Rob. There were some pretty cool knives out there. I have a knife by Knives by Nuge, and that was really cool. It would have been nice to get something from Jordan. JD Custom Knives is a fucking good dude. And I don't know, everybody. You know, Bald Man, I wanted Blade Show to be more of his bitch. I wanted to be more of his bitch, you know? But there was all sorts of good stuff. I'll tell you what was really cool was the Broadbeck guys debuted their new power hammer. They have an American-made power hammer that's fucking cool. And it's the reason why it's cool is because the anvil and the it's not heavy. Usually these kind of mechanical hammers are super heavy. You add sand, you know, when you get there, if you want deaden the sound of the anvil and you want all this stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like 400 pounds. So you can move it on like a hand truck, right? And it's perfect for knife making. And all you use is a compressor. So the compressor, you have whatever compressor you have, or get a better compressor. And it was this guy that they hooked up with who is this, you know, engineer, and he's making these beautiful little hammers, and they're really cool. They were very excited to be like unleashing new stuff, and they have new anvils they're having cast, and they're really getting into it.
So there's people demonstrating stuff while you're there. So like hammers are being demonstrated, and there's people with this fire going and stuff. Is it all going on?
The only fire I saw is Coal Iron Works had a Charlie Lionheart was working. They were working an induction forge.
Right.
Yeah. And then they were heating up some steel, and Charlie's going to be the new head of the... He's moving his whole family up to Indiana to be help the school. The coal ironworks is having a school, and Charlie's going to be the director of the school, which is cool because Charlie's a fucking good dude. So they were using an induction forge, and then they were using their coal iron press to kind of forge stuff down. That was pretty neat. I don't think they were forging steel. The hammer, I think that they were just demonstrating it on like wood and stuff like that. But it was really cool. The cool thing is all these companies are trying to figure out how the fuck to go forward, because things, especially with Instagram, are not the same. And a lot of people are having a real hard time. And you can see it. You can see how if the economy's no good and people don't have the extra money to spend on very expensive knives or even mid-range knives, then there's less guys going to like New Jersey Steel Baron to buy steel. Like you're seeing a direct correlation behind how these small guys and New Jersey Steel Baron doesn't, I mean, they're very diversified. They're not waiting for like some guy in a garage, no offense, to pay the rent. They got like many contacts. They do a lot of steel with a lot of different companies and stuff like that. But they are very aware of the custom knife game. So the whole thing was fascinating. I mean, it's like an economics lesson, you know, and in terms of like, what are you supposed to do? And the guys at Broadbeck are like doing everything they can to just not sit around and wait. And with that
amazing. So hammer as well now. Wow.
Well, you know, a lot.
And is that available now? Is that launched?
The Power Hammer, the Broadbeck Power Hammer is available for pre-order. It's definitely a good price. The price for that hammer is a good price. You should definitely go to BroadbeckIronworks.com. And just while we're here, BroadbeckIronworks.com has their Blade Show sale, which is not in front of me right now, but their sale is going through the end of the month, which is great because I guess they said that Instagram Meta put them in jail. And these motherfuckers pay for ads. And then all of a sudden they get restricted by the people they're giving the ad money to. And it was really like they just got out of jail. So they said, well, you know what? Fuck them. He didn't say that. But they said, we're going to have their sale. So Broadbeck Ironworks has a Blade Show sale going on through the end of June. So definitely take advantage of that. I know it's 15% off all attachments. They have great deals on all the packages. There's free attachments with a lot of the packages. You have to see what's going on over at BroadbeckIronworks.com. But it was awesome talking to Ryan and Vince, and they're being very forward thinking. And it's a small American business, and they're working hard. They're coming up with new stuff all the time. So
I'm looking at the hammer online now. So ship in within 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And you get an extra $250 if you pre-order it now as well.
And they're being built in the United States, which is, I think that to me is really great. Is like these, you know, for years there was American power hammers. Little Giant was a huge part of the building of the United States. And then something happened, like Beaudry made stuff here, and there are these old school power hammer companies. And now you're starting to see these American companies building because we have the Anyangs, which, no offense, they're awesome. But most power hammers now are made overseas. So it is kind of cool that these small American companies are trying to figure out how to make, you know, steel. And the Broadbeck hammer is a steel hammer, so you could repair it. It's not cast iron and you got to worry about, you know, brazing it or something like that. They're all made out of steel, and I'm just very proud to be involved with those guys. It's pretty cool. So
it looks awesome, this hammer.
Yeah, it's great.
Cool. Okay, shall we do some more questions?
We could do questions. Yes, we also have... Okay, so the next question comes from our friend Shrikar Venkatesh. Shrikar Venkatesh. Hey, guys, thank you so much for answering my question in depth. I was beaming all day. Here's a question. Where and how do you draw the line between craftsmanship and fuck it, it's too much work? That's a good question right there.
It is, and I think that's all about how commercially viable the product is, I'd imagine. I mean, if we all had money to burn, we'd all probably, you know, put extra hours in and stuff like that, you know, to make something what we deem to be the best it could possibly be. But there's financial restrictions because there's constraints on us all. And I think we need to make sure something is commercially viable. So, I mean, if we're spending, you know, 8 months on a single knife, it's going to be very, very difficult to sell that and make money.
Right.
It is a fine line between, that, you know, what would you label it? find craftsmanship or fuck it, it's too much
work. That
it is a fine line, but I do also think that it depends on techniques as well. For example, hand sanding. We always come back to hand sanding.
Right.
But I mean, to me, that's the bit that takes so much time. And I see other people getting off the belt finishes that are like amazing. I mean, Fingal's off the belt finishes are just off the charts, you know? So, you know, he's probably putting far less time in than I am, but he's getting a better result. So in that case, you can't really compare the two. But I think generally it's going to come down to that sort of commercial viability of what you're making.
And it's the desire. Like for me, hand sanding is, I think that it makes my knives look better. You know, period. And it is a lot of work. It's probably the most labor on each knife. And in terms of steps on each knife, it's the most. And it's the most. And David does a really good job doing it. And I'm really grateful for him for that. What's interesting about this question is you know, I don't know. I don't know if you were here last week or a week ago. I did a beer place asked me to make a beer handle.
The handles, yes.
And I thought, this would be a great opportunity to do something with some G10. So I made a stacked G10, you know, thing. And then I realized I had to countersink in a coupling to fit the, you know, the thread on the thing. And then I had to put some, it was a lot of work.
The bell end.
It was a lot of work on the bell end. You know what I'm saying? A lot of hand work on the bell end. It was a hand job on the bell end. Okay.
Yeah.
So the problem was when I got finished with it and I thought, all right, here's how I can make it a lot easier to do. Here's how I can make it faster to do. I thought to myself, this motherfucker is not going to buy this. Or I said, I'll do a sample. And I said, I knew this guy wasn't going to buy 12 of them. I'm like, for what? He's a fucking, you know, I just knew it. In my heart of hearts, I'm just like, hey. And then, you know, somebody was saying, well, I think they will. They'll be surprised. I'm like, dude.
Sorry, just say to go back. In your heart of hearts, you were like, hey.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the most New York thing ever. You're sitting there, you just go, it's all quiet, sitting on your own. You just go,
yeah, that's it. I mean, that's the real my heart of hearts. That's it. That's what my heart of hearts says. So, yeah, okay, I mean, it's totally 100%. And I walked in this place, I'm just like, let's bring it in. And I'm thinking to myself, I mean, what can I charge for this? I mean, well, number one, the material is not cheap. You know, G10, even if it's a scrap, I can use it for something. If I was to buy special colors and something, that would be expensive. And then the labor, and then the paint, and then the gluing up, and then the drilling, and the sanding, and then the two coats of Total Boat and all this stuff, and the threads. And it's a lot of work. So I gave him, I told him, and I walked in there being like, I know this ain't going to happen. And I looked at the guy. He's like, oh, this is so beautiful. I love it. I mean, what do you think it would cost to make them? I'm like, I'll tell you what it's going to cost to make them. And I gave him a price. And I said, and there's nothing I can do about it. You know, because it's just like, and he's just like, well, you know, it's just a lot. I said, I know. Even before he said no, I was like, I know you're not going to buy these. And it was crazy because I thought I could do them cheaper. But I would be, I mean, it would be just, I wouldn't even, I mean, not that I have to make money every job, but it'd be like a lot of work and I might end up losing, you know?
Yeah.
And what I should have done was I should have put it in a box and sent it to you. But I stupidly said to the guy, because I'm trying to be nice to all these locals, I said, yeah, well, keep it. Speak nicely of me when you have the chance. You know, if you ever hear, you know, but the funny thing was like, I knew that. I always end up doing like four or five samples of things that I know that are not going to go every year. And I just like chalk it up to that's just going to be the way it is.
Yeah.
And that's the crazy thing about this business, the knife game, is there's so much. I think we get too wrapped up in everything has got to make money. And we worry about, you know, these little things. But at the same time, you know, when is enough enough?
Hmm.
You know? That's my
It's an awkward because I mean sometimes you're making something and you know what it's costing to make it, you know the hours you're putting in, but even yourself, you're sometimes thinking I wouldn't buy this,
right?
Particularly if it's something that's not so much fun. A good example is the handle that you know, the beer pump handle. It's just you're just gilding the lily. It's not really functional,
right?
You know, it's not making anything better for them.
Right.
It's literally just aesthetically nicer,
right?
Yeah.
Well, that would be like, it'd be like I made it like out of pattern welded steel. The guy'd be like, what? I'm just going to pour a beer. Why am I paying $75 for this tap handle?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, well, you know, unfortunately, that's what it's going to cost to make these goddamn things. You know,
that's the work that's gone into it.
You know,
it.
I have no, I mean, like, I wish it could be cheaper, but if it's cheaper, like, I'm going to end up owing you money. You know, it's just like, I don't want to do all this work and owe you money. So that's the crazy part. And the funny, you know, when I first read this question, I was thinking of my dad, because my dad was the king of it's good enough. It's good enough. So like, even like, you know, we call him 85% fader, because like at 85% done, he's done. He's out. He's done. He's out. My sisters and all my artists, my sister and my dad and I, when we were making art for galleries, when we were 85% done, we're like, okay, it's enough. I'm done with it. Give it to the fucking gallerist, and this is your problem now. So like, good enough. Sometimes I fall down that rabbit hole of that's good enough.
Yeah.
The next one comes from our friend Paul Jansen. When do you think you have a real understanding of something? Is it knowing the theory, or does it take practical knowledge of having done it? For example, I knew in theory how to successfully make Damascus, but in practice, my first several attempts failed. I had to tweak what I thought I knew to match real-world applications before I had any success. I see a lot of keyboard warriors telling people how to do things that they cannot do themselves. Mm. Doesn't mean they're wrong in the advice, but it can be hard to listen to someone who has no experience.
Very good question, that one. Very good. I mean, I'm probably a prime example of that. I sit here week in, week out, and listening to sort of Mareko specifically talking about, you know, his amazing patterns, right, and everything that he does. So when a question comes in, quite often I maybe think I know the answer. I know what Mareko would say. But the difference is I don't know how to get to that answer.
Yeah.
You know, I only know the answer because I've heard it said so many times. I don't know how to. It's like showing you're working out, isn't it? Doing maths. You know, you know, you show you're working out to prove that you understand how it's done. And I couldn't do that. So, yeah. So I know what I know about that kind of stuff, basically just via osmosis, just by hearing it so often. Having never done it, I couldn't then give that advice to somebody else because, you know, having never done it, I could be full of shit.
Yeah,
I probably would be. Yeah.
The funny thing is like, I think about when I was a number of years ago, I reached out to Lynn Ray and I said, listen, I'd love to do a watercolor for you on how you'd make the X-ray knives. And he says, well, how much you want? I said, I don't want any money. I want to do it for you because I want one copy for myself. So he got on the phone with me, and I was on the phone with him for a while, and he sent me pictures and great details and all this stuff. And I drew it out, and I talked to him, and I had this understanding of what it was. And I thought I knew, but I drew it, and he appreciated it, and he liked the drawing, and we would make changes, and we spent time. And I thought to myself, I can forge one of these out now. Yeah. And the time came, and the first three looked like fucking shit. And it was like, it was clearly like this total 100%. You know, I spent time with the guy who taught it. I spent time with the guy who designed it. I spent time asking questions. I really spent time. I thought I knew it. But the changing from knowing to the physicality of it, it's fucking everyone. It's like a mirage. And right. I think everyone has that. And I think for me personally, I think I've said this a million times and I'll keep saying it. I think experience is underrated. And I think that it's the repetitions, but you cannot count. You just have to keep fucking going. There are little things that you just keep learning as you do it, and it becomes second nature. Once it becomes sort of second nature, you kind of have a understanding where you don't even need to talk about what it's supposed to be like. And I think that's the true understanding. It's like, I don't like counting. Like, I hate it when people say, how long have you been doing this? I could say
it doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything because my experience as a metal worker informed more of how to get these things across than learning stuff on YouTube. And that's the problem with YouTube. Everyone watches YouTube and all of a sudden they buy grinders and they think I know what I'm doing. And next thing you know, it's like a shit house, you know? So that's the hardest part, is being that honesty of like, you know. And the other thing is people like to talk shit on the internet.
Of course.
Oh, they love it.
Yes. Yeah. I saw a great quote from, you know, people put these stupid quotes up online, but apparently Keanu Reeves said this week.
Oh, God.
Have you seen it?
No, I'm waiting.
He said, I'm at the point where I don't argue with anybody now. If somebody tells me 2 and 2 equals 5, I just say, okay, that's cool. And I walk away. And it is almost like that now, isn't it? You know, if you can get into an argument so easily, and it's just like, have I got the time to sort of do this just to defend my belief? Is there any need? You know,
The social media for me is strictly to make money. I don't need to change people's minds. I don't need people to. I'm not looking for someone to say, I used to feel this way, but I heard what Jeff said on an Instagram post. Now all of a sudden I've changed my mind. I don't need that in my life. I don't give a fuck, you know? And the funny thing was I never say anything. I never correct people. I never do any of it. And this guy, you know, I think I even mentioned it a couple episodes ago, was looking for like somebody wanted to get their knives laser engraved on Facebook, and then somebody tagged me on it, and then there was a guy underneath, a scuba diving instructor said, oh, you're not supposed to use lasers on knives because that ruins the metal. and I'm like, I should just let this fucker go. But then I'm like, but then at the same time, I'm just like, yeah, but my name's underneath it and it makes it look like I agreed to this. So it's not true. And that's all I wrote. I'm like, yeah, that's not true. It's normal practice, 100% standard. I don't go into it. I try not to make it so it's, I don't want some sort of tennis match where they're going to hit the ball back to me and I'm going to hit the ball back to them.
Yeah.
But it's so hard not to say something.
It is. And I've occasionally gone down that rabbit hole, and it's just like, oh man.
I bet you
have. What if I started here, you know?
It's such a waste of energy.
Waste of everything. Yeah, you're right. It is.
I'll never forget years ago when we had some, like, one of those Pakistan or some countries were stealing knife makers' pictures and saying they could make them, and then
everybody was
sending them to us, and then we were having the whole Knife Talk audience like beat the brakes off this guy, and all I could think of is this is the worst waste of my emotional energy, and the guy would be like, why are these people attacking me? And it's just like, I can't go back and forth with people. I can't like wait to see what they're gonna say next, and I just it's all too much. So much.
But you do that thing, you're in the shower with them, it's like, oh, I wish I'd said that, I wish I'd done that.
100%. But now I have the podcast, so like I can make up stories about like Kyle Daly and Will Stelter's mom, and I can kind of I don't worry about that. I think to myself, like, how can I do this so it's not as bad as it really is gonna sound, or maybe I should exaggerate this part or not that part, I don't really worry about responses. However, I will say I was expecting a couple. I wasn't expecting our guy from Cyprus to come by. But it did cross. Remember the Cyprus guy who got mad at you?
Was he at Blade?
There's a couple of Blade guys that I did kind of like have my eyes in the back of my head hair. There was one Bally song guy I tore up maybe a year ago. I tore up some Bally song guy, and he was like, you know, he wasn't very happy with me. So I did have, you know, I was watching my six, as they say. I keep my eyes open. But there were no unfortunate situations.
Good stuff. Were the Texas Fire Supply guys there?
Dude, Evan came right up to me. He's such a good guy, loves the podcast. They were cruising around. Texas Fire Supply are fantastic. They have everything you need. And if you go to TexasFireSupply.com, put in the promo code Knife Talk 10, that's right, you get 10% off everything. And Evan was so grateful to us, and he really appreciated what we do for the community, and he's great. And if you get the Rhino Wet, you won't regret it. I actually have to order some Rhino Wet now, and I will go to Texas Fire Supply and get it from them, because they're just great people, and I really appreciate the hell out of them. So get yourself some of that Rhino Wet at TexasFireSupply.com. put in the promo code Knife Talk 10. You want some would you rathers, or?
Yeah, let's do some of them.
All right, guys, you've been like killing it with us with the would you rather. The would you rathers have been a really great addition to the show. So go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and you can give us the will you rather, would you rather. This one comes from Bremner Built Knives. Would you rather have, Jesus Christ, I need to take it back. Would you rather have to constantly smell farts while you're using the grinder, or you'd have to use a grinder shirtless, no respirator allowed? So you can either smell, well, it's either your farts or someone else's farts. That's number one. Or grind without a shirt on.
Grind up. Oh, Jesus. Imagine getting a nipple on a 60 grit belt.
Oh, baby. Among other things. Oh, baby. Oh, baby.
Oh.
Burn one of them. Burn one of them chest hairs off with some blade. Oh, forget it.
Oh, geez, no.
Just the grit.
I'd prefer the fart smell.
But your farts.
It's a lesser of two evils. I wouldn't say prefer. It's the lesser of the two evils because at least you're not getting hurt.
Right.
You're safe.
Well, if it was my farts, that'd be one thing. If it was somebody else's farts, now we have a different conversation.
Yeah.
I'm changing my grinding technique, I think. I can't be smelling someone else's farts.
We're at that point here now. Where all the farmers, because the weather's changed a bit, so all the farmers are out and they're all spreading muck over all their fields. So whenever we're out in the car, the kids are always like, they're all looking at each other to say, is that you?
Oh,
is that me?
Best. That's the best. This smells like a field of cow shit and they're all thinking it's each other.
Yeah, exactly.
How hilarious is that? How great are kids?
They're the best. That is the best.
Yeah. That is the best response. But when I was a kid, I said, what is that smell? And somebody would say, it's your upper lip. You know, but kids thinking, oh, that is great. That is great.
Yeah.
This one comes from Grub Knives. Grub Knives says, would you rather hand sand with nothing coarser than 800 grit or all your knives are 36 grit and quit? I like gritty. So you can only hand sand with 800 grit or all your knives are belt finished with 36 grit and quit. That's a rough look.
It is. It is.
As a rough look.
So can you go to 800 or they're all 800?
I think it's hand sanding with nothing coarser than 800.
With nothing but, oh, geez.
Or your knives are all 36 grit and quit.
The fake brute de forge look, I think, is the way to go there. 36, hit him with a hammer a few times.
Oh, yeah.
In his whole intentional.
That is one of those things that I'm not surprised about, but you know, there are the belt finish is so hard. The belt finish is to make it look good. I can think of like maybe a few people who really do an awesome job. Pariah Knives does an awesome job with the belt finish. I talked to him once and he was just like, I hold my breath. Fucking pray, you know. It's like it's a one false move and you're out, you know.
And
the other thing is if your platen isn't 100% flat, if you have any dips in there, the dips are going to make all those belt finishes, you know, you're gonna transfer that somehow on there. You're gonna have a little, you know, facets and stuff. But that's a tough one, man. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I'm gonna try to work on that belt finish and try to, like you said, I'm gonna fuck it up. I might actually, you know what I might do is I might do the belt. One of the things I always thought we should do on Knife Talk is we should do the 45, right angle grinder challenge. And the only piece of equipment you can use besides drilling holes is a right angle grinder.
There'd be fingers missing. There'd be all sorts.
I think we always are trying to solve knife making answers. Knife making questions with knife making answers. I bet you people could make highest quality knives with a right angle grinder. I'm convinced. It's just a different way of moving. That's all.
I do not endorse such a practice.
I don't either. But I mean, like, people make it happen.
I'm sure people are. Yeah. But it's not something I'd want to try even.
I would totally love to try it. I would. I bet you I could cut down some fucking bevels in quick, fast, and in a hurry. I that's all I did for years is riding grinders for all the goddamn railings and shit. It's awful, but I mean, I bet you I could do it.
Yeah, give it a go. Give it a go.
It's okay. Plumley Knives says, "Would you rather?" This comes with a story. Would you rather miss your flight home from Blade Show? Or toss a kitchen knife into the trash. I may be asking for experience. So you miss your flight because you get through TSA and they realize you have a knife on you and they got to throw it out. Or you miss your flight, or do you figure out a way to get your knife home? Or you toss the kitchen knife? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So yeah, if you keep the knife, you're going to be late, basically.
If you keep the knife... Well, then you won't keep the knife. You have to figure out a way to send it home, and you're going to miss your flight.
Ah, right. Okay. Yeah.
Or throw the knife out and then make your flight. Depends on who you're with. you're with
who you're with, and purely economics, then I think as well.
If you were with your, if you and your whole family are going to take a flight, three kids and your wife.
Oh, geez.
And you got that knife on you, and then they're going to be like, "You're going to miss this flight, or you throw it out." You're turning to Amy. And what if it's a really expensive knife? You're going to have to.
That's the thing. It's down to economics, then, isn't it? You know, if you spent, let's say a couple of grand on a knife.
Oh, Amy, you know, Amy, you're going to be mad. You're not going to be happy about this. Wait a second. What do you mean you're not going to be happy about this? You're not going to be happy about this. You're going to miss this flight. What do you mean you're going to miss this flight? I got to take this home. I can't be living this. Oh, man. It's like when one of you forgot their passports or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. I've got to say, right, so my wife came back last weekend with me to Wales for a gig, and we left the kids over here with grandparents. That's the first time, I think, since the kids have been born that we've both got on a flight without the kids.
Yeah.
And it was just so fucking easy. It was amazing. We had a drink. We just strolled on.
Yeah.
You know, we both had a little nap on the flight as well.
No,
and it was just
no,
like...
No bags, oh, no extra my. Bags.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just like, oh, my God. Oh my God, it was amazing. So, I'm over tomorrow on my own. But next month, we both fly over again. And we're leaving the kids again. I think that's just the thing now. We're just going to leave the kids at home every time.
You got to figure out a way to get the first class, you know?
Ugh. No, yeah. I mean, it's an hour and 20-minute flight. You know?
I tell you what, with my wife, now that our daughter's in college, it's a different life. It is a different life, and it's you know, a lot of people get concerned that, you know, about the empty nest syndrome and stuff like that, but
yeah
we figured it out. We're having a good time. We're you know, loose and fancy free. It's like we do whatever we want. So I didn't answer the question, and then we got to tell Plum. So what are you doing? Are you gonna, is it all economics, right? You throwing it?
It's all economics for me. So yeah, so if the knife's a couple of grand but the flights are cheaper, well, you miss the flight, you make sure the knife is sent. If it's the other way around, you dump the knife, you jump on the
flight. That happens a lot. Actually, I had a customer of mine who was very upset because he forgot to take it out of his bag at TSA, and then they were nice enough to send it home to him, but it took him a long time. He was concerned. I don't know. I don't know what I would do. Knowing me, I'd say, fuck the knife. Get me out of here. That's knowing me in my heart of hearts. Ugh. I would say, get me the fuck out of here. I'd be furious with myself for quite a long time. You know, especially if it wasn't my, if it was my knife, I'd be like, call up AZ and I'd say, all right, Allison, we need a write off. but other than that, I don't know. So Plumley Knives says, I was going back through TSA and I forgot a knife in my backpack. Luckily, they told me it was too nice to throw away, so they let me go back to check it in my bag. When I got to the check-in counter, the manager was trying to help me get my bag back to put the knife in. But then they decided they weren't going to be able to get it back in time for the flight to leave. So I was about to toss it when she sees what it looks like and says that she can mail it to me. So I barely made the flight and she's sending the knife on a later flight to the airport.
Yeah, right.
It happens. This shit is happening. I mean, people are nice. Some people are nice. Some people are fuck you and your knife.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. I hear that shit.
Seeing the amount of stuff being tossed,
yeah.
Even like perfumes and things like that, you know, people spend a fortune on and they can't take them. You'd think there's a business opportunity for somebody there. Set up a little booth in security and say, right then, anything you want shipped, we'll ship it and we'll charge a premium, you know?
Yeah. It's so weird because, like, I wasn't talking to the Australians. Like, Sausage Man Forge was there. I saw Toby Morrell from the Fire and Steel podcast. And they were concerned with what the legalities of flying back with wood from the United States would have been. Like, they were very concerned about
particularly some
that.
Of those African hardwoods, which are banned. I mean, even some guitars, getting guitars shipped around
rosewood,
the world is difficult,
right?
Now. Because a lot of it with rosewood, yes, yeah. But I think there's others on that list now as well, you know? You know, those endangered species. So, yeah. You know, it's not obvious what a species is it? You know, if it looks a bit flash and looks a bit expensive, you could easily think, there's a problem.
My TSA people were morons. So, like, they didn't know what the hell was going on. But, like, I would imagine, you know, you lump down a pile of money for especially, you know, exotic woods. He brought me a nice piece of ring gidgee? Yeah, it's a Australian timber. They call it timber over there. They don't call it wood. Well, I guess wood's your dick over there in Australia. So they don't talk about that. But, so they were concerned. I mean, obviously you're concerned because it's just like, you know, you bring all this stuff back, and next thing you know, they're at the border saying, yeah, you can't come through with this. This is like some sort of, you know, species that's going to, like, you know, turn Australia into pestilence.
Yeah, it's probably dried kangaroo shit.
Did I tell you a number of years ago where they gave you, we were talking
the nuts.
Yeah, this is because of this fucking podcast. Kev Slattery and Mert Tansu presented me with a set of balls, kangaroo balls, and it was a kangaroo balls bottle opener, and it had like a sharp bottle opener, and I said, I'll never get on the plane with this because of the sharp end. So I went over to a grinder company. I said, would you mind just grinding off the tip of this? I was serious. I was like, listen, I got something weird. I got a set of kangaroo balls with a sharp end. Can you just you take the sharp end off? The guy's like, yeah, right. I'm pull this fuzzy set of balls out. And it was sharp. he cut them down, and then I was like, okay, I think I should be okay. And I'm going through TSA once again. This is like, you know, six years ago. And they're pulling out my stuff, and I'm thinking to myself, what am I going to say when they pull out a set of balls? What am I going to say? Because it's a set of fucking kangaroo balls, furry kangaroo balls. And luckily, they didn't grab it. And it was a female TSA officer. So I'm thinking to myself, all right, just, you know, this is a Me Too situation on top of it all. And I mean, as a scene, you can't be, you know, what is this, sir? I'm like, well, scrotum wrapped ball, you know, bottle opener from Australia.
That was back in the day when we talked about Knife Talk Down Under a lot until I wrote a song about teenage boy that they tricked me into doing.
God, that's a fucking deep cut right there. That is the deepest of deep cuts. So we got you got to tell the story. You can't just say it. You got to tell the story. So there was we had so many Australian listeners, and our friends Kev and Corin of Gamaco and Mert Tansu started Knife Making Down Under. And it was great because it was their version of Knife Talk. And I'm used
to, it was an excuse for them to get drunk. Oh, let's face it.
And it was, well, you know, what's interesting enough, I had Kev on a number of years ago, and he was saying that it was more of, you know, we used to do a live Knife Talk. And the problem was no one was really, I mean, it was hard to do. It just didn't sound right when it was recorded.
Yeah.
But the Knife Making Down Under guys, who we jokingly referred to as Knife Talk Down Under, they had this live event. And their whole fucking listenership would all go in their shop, put it on, and they'd all be drinking. Like, it was like a place to be, especially during lockdown. So, like, it was like a big deal. Like, it was a big deal, like this live event. They didn't know, no one wanted to fucking listen. No one wanted to fucking listen to it later. They wanted to be there. And when they stopped, it was very upsetting. But the funniest part was one of our listeners, I think, said something along the lines of, I want to like you guys, but I love the Knife Talk and the Knife Talk Down Under guys better. And then you, I don't know what possessed you, but you wrote a song to this guy saying, come back, baby, come back. Because I'm like, that.
We'll fight for every listener.
Yeah, fight for every listener.
Like,
you wrote this awesome song. You played it on the song. One day I'm on Instagram Live, and the Australians are laughing their asses off. And they say, does Craig know that the guy they wrote the song to is like 17? And then, what are you doing writing songs to 17-year-old boys there, Craig? Fucking hilarious. And then I broke the news to you, and you're just like, all right, let's never talk about this again.
Exactly.
But, you know, that's what...
I'm over it now. I said 6 or 7 years ago, I'm over
it.
Dude,
comedy equals tragedy plus time, so we're good.
He's of legal age.
Yeah, we're good. We're good now. Now we can talk all about it. It was a fucking awesome thing, so... next one comes from our friend. Oh, I saw Bob Rankin. Bob Rankin sends his regards.
Oh, amazing.
Little Bob Rankin.
Amazing.
He looks great. Bob Rankin says, would you rather have to share your shop with this with Jeff Snake or a family of tarantulas? Hey, yo. I mean, that's a question. Jeff Snake, hey, baby. Jeff's only sharing this snake with one person. You know what I'm saying? Would you rather share your... would you rather have a snake or a family of tarantulas?
I'm not keen on spiders, but I'm okay with spiders. But a snake, I couldn't be in the room. There's no way in the world.
There was an episode, if you go back, if you're on Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram and you go back in the feed, when
I had my little dark studio, yes.
You had this little dark studio, and you would take, the best thing is you used to take clips. If you're listening to this on Knife Talk Podcast, you can listen to the beginning of, Craig used to do the best drops of each episode, and he would put that as the teaser of this episode. Mm. So you can go back and listen to these hilarious moments. And then one moment is when we were doing it on YouTube and we had the pictures of us all. We're all standing there. And then you get up and you fucking leave. Well, it turns out there's a spider walked in, and you're like, I got to get the fuck out of here.
It was huge.
It was huge. And then Mareko and I had to keep the ball rolling, but it was hilarious because you're just like, that thing was big. It was really big, and you ran right out.
Yeah, but I'm okay with spiders. You know, they don't terrify me. But yeah, snakes do. No one knows a snake in the room.
The snake was a problem. And I got a snake. Yeah. Well, I'll take the snake over to the tarantulas because now the first time was the bad time. Now I'm comfortable with when the snake comes in because I know they're not going to hurt me. And I did get a snake grabbing thing. I got one of those things on Amazon where you can safely pick it up and fuck it away off. Because I'm not going to reach in under something and grab it. I just wanted to get rid of it. I walked around. It was in the shop, you know, coiled up. And I was like, fuck this shit. So I got one of those. It's like one of those things that you can pick up something from a high place.
Like a grabber.
Yeah, grabber. Yeah, so I'm just I'm not calling people every time I got a fucking snake in the shop. That's like, you know, one time it's bad, two times it's no good. All right. And the last one comes from Lucky Bastard Artworks. Lucky Bastard Artworks. Lucky has a Lucky.
Jesus Christ.
You don't like that name?
Sounds like a classy sort of establishment.
Yeah, Lucky Bastard Artworks. You're a lucky bastard when you get my artworks. Would you rather only be able to use one drill bit for the rest of your life that was constantly dull, or only be able to hot punch any tang holes you needed? Hot punch any tang holes you needed. So if you, instead of, you had to have a dull drill bit, or you have to hot punch any holes you need.
Yeah. I'd go with hot punching, I think, because it's possible. Whereas if you've got a dull drill bit, it's going to get to a point where it's not possible. You know, you're just hardening the steel even worse. So,
Do you know what the most satisfying thing is when you can resharpen a drill bit yourself? It took me years. It took me years to figure it out.
Yeah, I've never done it because I've just tossed them and because they're cheap enough.
Yeah, want to get a little bit extra life on a drill bit and you figure out, so it's like, you know, those drill bits are like, it's like two planes and they meet in the middle, but you need to angle them so the cutting edge is facing down a hair. You can bump them on like a disc grinder and then you can get a little bit more life on them. My old boss used to get these drill doctors and all these bullshit pieces of equipment that like try to like repair your drill bits. They fucking suck. But if you can, if you get it right, if you haven't destroyed the drill bit and you can kind of sharpen the drill bit, that's a good feeling right there. I'm going to go sharpen the drill bit. I pot punching steel, knife steel sucks, especially on the tangs. I ain't doing that. Got to straighten it, all this bullshit. I don't do that. So there we go. If you want to send more would you rathers, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and then you can send us more Will You Rather. That's a fun bit. I love Will You Rather. So, Would You Rather.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. Right, let's tell everybody about Lawrence then and MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Not only did he get first-class flights, he's got the first-class gear to buy too. Belts are 10% off. You get 10 packs. No codes needed or anything like that. You just head on over to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. And he's the one-stop shop for knife makers. Steel, belts, handle materials, tools, forges, kilns, and more. Go take a look. He's a good dude.
He's a great guy. And he's like, if you want something or need something, or actually, if you're looking for help in regards to facilitating things, he's the king of the facilitators. He can help you make things happen. He's like, I don't know how much time he has in the day. And if you ever go to his website, he's got everything you need. He knows everybody. He knows what to do. He's like, he makes that shit happen. He loves to do it too. So yeah, he and I had a really good time hanging out. And the cool thing was he was wearing a Maritime Knife Supply shirt, and this guy goes up to him and he was walking past. He's like, hey, I just got some stuff off of Maritime Knife Supply. And he just like pulls out, he got a pile of, he gives him a pencil, he gives him a ruler, he gives him a this, he gives him a that. He's like, oh cool, I'm Maritime Knife Supply. He's like, oh really? That was awesome. That was really kind of cool. So yeah, people are really kind of know who he is now, and he's just like a dynamite guy.
Yeah, and if you're across the water there, in whether in Canada or the States, you can get your Dharma Steel from him too. Remember, he's the only stockist of the Dharma Steel build along billets that we're selling, that he's selling there. And make sure you go take a look at the Dharma Steel stuff he's got. Dharmasteel.se. Everybody who uses Dharma Steel just loves it. And it's easy to use, looks beautiful. Dharma Steel, S.se.
When do you want me to tell you about Carly?
Tell me now.
She's great. Carly? She's hilarious. And all those guys are really cool. And, you know, the best part about the Damasteel, the guys over there, they didn't have to sell anything. They were there. They had all their stuff there. They were showing people Damasteel. They were kind of like being informational. It felt like there wasn't a lot of pressure on them to like do some things. And Carly's, she's terrific. And she loves this podcast. She was like, I feel like you guys are like my brothers and I listen to everything and know what the hell's going on. And every time I walked around, all I could think of is that commercial that they do where one guy goes, build along, build along. So I'm walking around going, build along, build along. And every time I saw her, I'd be like, build along. And she'd say, build along. It was very funny. She's terrific. And you'd like Carly. I'm telling you, dude, you got to come to Blade Show.
I know. I'd love to. I really would love to. Well, they do two a year now as well, don't they?
Well, there's only one worth a damn. I don't go to the West. I'm going to the West Coast one. But I will say this. Atlanta sucks. Atlanta blows.
As a place. Right.
Atlanta sucks. I'm sorry if you're from Atlanta. God bless you and your family, but your state, Georgia blows. I'm sorry. Not Georgia. Atlanta. Atlanta sucks. Flying into Atlanta is fine. Getting to the Cobb show is not optimal, but it's just nothing going on in Atlanta. Atlanta can kiss it. It's far.
How far is it from the airport?
30 minutes. 30-minute Uber ride. Right. Not too bad, but it's like, I mean, you're not going to go do something. I mean, the thing that everyone is doing, they're going to the Waffle House for fucking waffles. It's just some bullshit. Fuck that. Atlanta can, you know. God bless you and the Braves. Fuck the Braves. But other than that,
there's a strap line for them. Fuck that.
Yeah. Waffle House. Scattered, smothered, and fuck that. That's where you get the... You know, Waffle House is a classic American kind of southern diner. And they're known for their waffles, but they're also known for their hash browns. And the way you order them is you can get them scattered, smothered, or covered. So that's the whole thing. You go down there and you get these bullshit waffles and you can get your cash rounds scattered, smothered, and covered. And it's garbage. It's fucking terrible.
Whilst we're talking about hash browns, it was one of the reasons my wife came back with me last week. It was our 10-year anniversary.
Oh, how'd it go?
It was lovely. So we booked a really nice hotel and all the rest of it. Anyway, and so the next morning for breakfast in this hotel now, you go down. And it was a Spanish place. It's like high-end sort of fine dining Spanish style. But they only open for breakfast for the residents. And there's only like 8 rooms in this whole hotel, you know? Beautiful place. You go down and you look at the menu and it's like overnight bacon. And I'm thinking, overnight bacon? What the hell is that? But it had these hash browns with it as well. I've never had a hash brown that is so like crispy. Is it panko breadcrumbs? The Japanese breadcrumbs that are like super crispy. Yeah, yeah. They had those on the outside and it was just... There was like chorizo in it and stuff as well. It was just like the most beautiful thing ever. But this bacon, overnight bacon. So they take bacon, they'd lay slab on top of each other, slice on top of each other, compress it down, really hard compress it down, and just cook it really slow overnight. Huh. And I've got to say, it was just unbelievable.
It was good.
It was so good. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so good. So good. So, yeah, we're going to try and replicate that at some point, I'm sure.
Jeez. But,
super.
Was it just really crispy?
Really crispy, but just like the taste was just
concentrated.
Like bacon, exactly, concentrated, you know? And then they trimmed it out then to make this like perfect square. Do you know, like when the Spanish do like belly pork and they compress it and they make the squares?
Yeah.
And it was like that with bacon, basically. She didn't have the big fatty bit. It was just so good.
Speaking of food, if you're looking for a new podcast to listen to, the boys over at Overseasoned are back.
I did see, yes.
And
yes.
Tony and X have like spent some money on like they're going to like recording studios and they're doing this stuff.
Wow.
The first two episodes back, overseasoned.us, definitely follow them on Instagram. They have great chemistry. They have really great chemistry, and they did a whole episode on tater tots, which is hilarious, and whether or not how you serve the tater tots, and they were figuring out, you know, how to do it and stuff like that. And they did a really the second episode back. It was all about Dom Perignon and like how a sommelier prices champagne and wines. You'd think, oh, the first class Jeff wants to know about. You know, it was very, very. It was very, very easy to listen to, and it is definitely one of my favorite podcasts. So Overseasoned is really, really good. They do a great job. Tony, my business partner, and Xavier do a really fucking good job. So I'm glad they're back.
Amazing. Right, should we call it a day?
Yeah, whatever you want, my buddy.
Yeah, let's do it. So next week, we're not sure if Mareko's back with us. We're not quite sure where he is, actually. He's either in Italy or Ireland.
Do a little 5-minute after show, and we can talk about it.
Yeah, should we? Okay, let's press the button.
That makes me laugh so hard. If we really
we're now officially in the
you
after
really
show.
Set the tone, that one noise, and all of a sudden it's a different show. It's the best.
It is. My belt's undone. I'm laid back a bit more. Yeah.
I think I don't know when Mareko said. He said in the messages he'll be back next week. So we'll play it by ear.
Cool.
I know.
Yeah. I think he was taking some kit with him to still be able to do it, and it would be great. Maybe we can get Fingal on the show as well with him.
Who knows where he is?
We'll see.
But
we'll
I'll see. Definitely be back next week, and then I'll be back the following week. I leave for Spain in 2 weeks, the next two Thursdays. But then the following Thursday, I don't think I'm going to be around. And then I got big news. I'm going to fucking Sweden in August.
Sweden. What for?
Tormek. Tormek invited me to come out. Can you believe it?
Nice.
After all the shit I talked about Tormek over the years.
You know, I'm a little bit fuming because when I was a big fan of them and you were like, no, I can't be using them. I contacted them and said, we should do something then, maybe on the show or something. I'll come over and we'll do it. And they were like, yeah, maybe.
Well, I really boomeranged with them. I'm like all in with them. And I ended up giving it another try. And it was all, you know, the funny thing that we talk about tool regret. I had tool regret, but it was like, it's all operator error. It was all me. Mm. It wasn't fucking the tool. Yeah. It was me. And
they are cool.
And I've
They're
gotten
really cool.
involved with them. And I had drinks with them in Barcelona last year with Tomer. And then they reached out to me and they said, we're doing this this art event. Would you like to submit a knife? I said, yeah, sure. And then they said, how'd you like to come out here?
Amazing.
How'd you like to come out here for a week? And I was like,
Wow.
So they're flying me and my wife are going to come out. And we're going to go to in the end of August. My kid's going to leave. And Hillary, this is
amazing.
Wondering something funny. So I said to my wife, I woke up in the morning. We wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I said, "Hey, listen, I just got invited to Sweden. What do you think?" And she goes, "The first thing she says at her mouth, 5 o'clock in the morning, she goes, orgie borgie." I said, "Okay, you're in." She said, "Orgie borgie," and that was the end of it.
She flew
it, like a fucking great. But that's what she says now. We talk about going to Sweden. She says, "Orgie borgie."
Nice.
But they're so nice over there, and they just sent me the kind of like the itinerary of what they're going to do. And I've never been to Sweden. I've never been to Stockholm, so I'm very excited about that.
Amazing.
I might do a presentation. Yeah. And I told them whatever kind of they want to do some podcasting. So I said, whatever you want to do, I'm you can count on me.
Yeah.
So
nice. I mean, I've never been, but I've heard it's just the most beautiful place with the most beautiful people too.
I mean, I'm 50. I mean, I can't say no to too much more. You know what I mean? It's like, how much more time do I have?
Got to do
whatever
it
takes.
Without a doubt.
That's that.
Nice.
And it's Father's Day this comes out on Monday.
It is.
Father's Day
It is
Saturday.
For us here as well, because we have a different Mother's Day to you. But Father's Day does land on the same day as in the US. But yeah, I'm not home with my kids.
Oh, no.
Which is, so I'm a little bit gutted with that. But so I'm spending my Father's Day with Liam Gallagher.
Oh, that's pretty good. He's like your real father, though, right? I mean, he's
your real father, rock and roll.
He's your real father. I'll tell you what we're doing. My family's the best. There's this place, I mentioned it before. It's called Johnny's Reef. There's this little place, the little island off the Bronx. It's called City Island. And it's like Italian, Dominican. It's like kind of crazy. It's like the seaside, wacky. And they have these seafood places where you go in and you get like a cafe, you get like a cafeteria tray, and then you can get anything you can think of. And you sit under you're on a pier, and then there's like park bench and stuff like that. And they're known for their oysters for their clams and the fried shrimp and then the fried lobster and then
sounds amazing.
And then their drink they're known for is a frozen piña colada that they put a floater of Hennessy on top. So you call it a Henny colada. So you're thinking to yourself, this can't be good. And then we started going there, and I'm like, hey, I got to get the Henny colada. I'm here with all these, you know, Dominican people and Italians. I got to fucking be with everybody else. So I'm eating raw clams and a frozen pina colada with a Hennessy floater. And all you can think of is, oh, I am going to shit my pants in this as soon as I get in the car. But somehow it works. My wife said that what's going to happen is the alcohol and all the bullshit is going to interact with all the fucking hepatitis C in them raw clams.
So quite possibly,
she said
it all
counteracts each other. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
So they're going to take me to Johnny's Reef, and we're gonna hopefully witness a brawl. Because after a couple of Hennessy coladas, no chair is safe. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh,
so we're gonna do that. We're gonna do that. It's hilarious. So,
yeah, exciting times coming up for us all. Then
look, we're getting older, but we're seizing the day. You know, we're
exactly.
Grabbing the juice by the balls. Is that what is the expression?
The balls by the juice. Either way, we're doing it. Yeah.
And you know, that's the thing about the three of us. We're opportunities are presenting itself, and we're saying, "Fuck yeah, grab them by the balls,
exactly.
Let's go." Orgy borgy,
exactly.
No problem.
Hokey boy, how do I spell
don't
that?
Put it in there.
Though?
Don't put it in there. They didn't buy my tickets yet. Don't buy it.
Right, it's been lovely. We shall speak again next week. Bye for now.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.